And here we are with another exciting hour. We're going to dedicate this hour to one of my favorite subjects, old-time television and the Andy Griffith Show in particular. Actually, we're going to be talking to one of the authors, Aunt Dee's Mayberry Cookbook. It's chock-full of a lot of things, including some great recipes. First of all, let's welcome our guest, Jim Clark, on the line from Nashville. How are you, Jim?
Fine. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I'm just noticing this book here. Now, Ken Beck is the man that you wrote this with, right?
That's right.
Which one of you guys founded the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club?
That was me back in 1979.
By looking at this book, it looks like you've pretty well watched every rerun at least once.
Oh, I think I've seen all of them at least 10 times, and most of them quite a bit more than that.
Now, how many people are in this? If it's a club, it must have more than one person.
Right. We don't keep a real close count. The last time we took a count, we had about 20,000 members nationwide in about 20 foreign countries, and about 650 organized chapters of the club all across the country.
You guys ever have a convention?
Not a real official one. We had, during the 30th anniversary of the show back in 1990, we had a gathering where 13 of the cast members came to an event in Charlotte, North Carolina, and that was as close as we came to having a bona fide convention, I guess.
Now, is there really a town named Mayberry?
There's no actual Mayberry, North Carolina. There is not an area in North Carolina with Andy Griffith's hometown, and a lot of the names of places and people and streets and that kind of thing, and geographic here by Mount Airy are mentioned on the Andy shows. There's a lot of the flavor of Mount Airy, of course, all the different parts of North Carolina that are part of Mayberry and the Andy Griffith Show.
Now, they actually filmed this show in Hollywood, right?
Right.
They never did any location work there, did they? In North Carolina?
North Carolina, no. They did location work in Southern California, but it was all filmed in California.
So you started this in 1979, I guess, let me ask you, what appealed to you so much about this show that you had to become such a fanatic about it?
Well, I always loved the Andy Griffith Show. I was born the year the show started in 1960 in North Carolina, so I guess I had a real bad case of identifying with the show and really enjoying it as great entertainment. And
Maybe your mother watched it.
Oh, yeah, my mother, my whole family. Everybody watched it. North Carolina is kind of like, you know, it's almost a religion. You have to watch the Andy Griffith Show, but I think it's beyond North Carolina. It's a nationwide kind of thing. People really enjoy the show. I had a real bad case of it, I guess, and I went to college here in Nashville and found some other folk college who enjoyed watching the show. We got together every day and watched it, cut classes or whatever, just to sit around and watch reruns of Andy Griffith Show. And then it came that the day that MASH aired at the same time as the Andy Griffith Show, and we only had one TV set at our fraternity house. So,
uh-oh.
So if the MASH people got there first, they got to watch their show, and if we got there first, we got to watch our show. So we made sure that we got at least one of us there every day to get dibs for the TV for the Andy Griffith Show. And we said, well, we're doing this, as long as we're organizing ourselves like this, we might as well call ourselves something. So we thought up the name, the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club. Didn't think it'd matter, you know, the next week, much less 13 years later or whatever, that we'd call ourselves that, but here we are. And more people began to hear about us, and they said, well, we'd like to join your club. We love the Andy Griffith Show. We said, sure, you know, you're in. And through word of mouth and that kind of thing, we've grown, but it's been a lot of fun.
Now this book, in addition to some great recipes, has a lot of information about the Andy Griffith Show, and especially about some of the characters, which we'll get into here in a moment. It's available in most bookstores, right?
Right. Most bookstores nationwide should have it in stock, or else they can easily order it, I'm sure.
Well, I can imagine anyone in America not at least somewhat addicted to the Andy Griffith Show. I guess there are people that didn't like the show, but I've really never run across anybody.
I've only run across couple who didn't like it, and usually those are folks who really never gave it a chance and watched it. People who watched it at all just seemed to fall in love with it, and I think it's the number one show on cable television right now in rerun. It's in like 110 markets nationwide, and it actually is seen by more people now than it was when it was the number one show in primetime when it went off the air back in 1968, so it's really watched by just millions of people every day.
Yeah, that was kind of my sense about it. I'm glad you mentioned that. I was going to ask you about that later in the show if it didn't come up. I get the feeling it's watched more now than ever before.
It really is. You know, thanks to a station like TBS out of Atlanta, which brings it through cable and satellites to a lot of markets that wouldn't ordinarily get it, plus, again, the other 100 or so markets that carry it with local stations.
Aunt Dee's Mayberry Cookbook is the name of the book. We've got a lot of things to talk to Jim about. This is Jerry Pippin on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. We have Jim Clark, one of the authors of the Aunt Dee's Mayberry Cookbook. And the recipes, actually, you had them edited by someone else. Is that correct?
Right. Relic Show Press, our publisher here in Nashville, has a lady named Julia Pitkin, who is a great recipe editor and cookbook compiler. She helped us, you know, fine-tune the recipes and make sure the recipes we're using were in fact very good ones, because we wanted to make sure they were appropriate for Aunt Dee and up to her qualities.
Now, actually, I guess the recipes in here are authentic, not only to the fictional Mayberry and their characters, but some of the cast members even contributed some things.
That's right. We've got about 40 recipes or so from members of the cast and crew of the show who sent in either their favorite recipes or also ones they thought would be appropriate for their characters. So got some really great recipes from the cast, and we went through all the episodes of the show and picked out all the recipes to either food or eating or cooking and tried to include as many of those types of foods as we could in the cookbook to kind of give it a real genuine Mayberry feel to it.
Mm. You know, I one of the things I like about this thing is I thumbed through the book here, Jim. Was this your idea or your co-authors? But you kind of do a little, not only do you have dialogue from the show, it looks like it's actual script, is it?
Right, we went through it again, found to find dialogue that was discussing food and cooking and eating and trying to include some of those to kind of add fun to it, kind of give a feel for the show and make it fun to read as well as to cook with.
And then you have each of the characters, you actually give a little thumbnail sketch about them and the actors themselves. For instance, I never realized that Warren Ferguson, who was, Barney Fife's assistant.
Right. When Don Knotts left the show, Warren Ferguson became the deputy that replaced Barney for
You're right. So assistant wouldn't be the right word. Well, I guess he's replacement.
Right.
He's actually from Boston.
Uh-huh.
And I never realized that before.
And he's Floyd the Barber's cousin, or nephew.
In real life, or just a character?
It is just a character.
Oh, okay. Why did Barney leave the show?
Well, one of our family, they were originally planning to do just 5 seasons, and once the 5th season was about to wrap up, Don Knotts, that was still the case, and was getting movie offers, and accepted one from Universal Pictures, but in the meantime, Andy Griffith decided he was going to do 3 more seasons, but by the time he made that Don Knotts already had commitment to do movies, so he did come back and do 5 guest appearances over the next 3 seasons whenever he had a break from his movie work, but that was the reason he left, just that he thought that was the plan.
There's no personal animosity or anything?
Not at all. In fact, Don Knotts and Andy Griffith remain very good friends to this day. In fact, we're still seeing Don Knotts on that lot these days with Andy Griffith.
Sounds like this was one of the secrets of the success is this whole cast and crew, writers and producers and everything really were kind of a family, weren't they?
They really were. They all described it that way when I talked to them. They say, it really was. You hear stories that sometimes it's not that way in Hollywood. But in the case of Andy Griffith, it really was. Folks got along. They liked each other. Respected each other. Enjoyed working. Enjoyed coming together every week to work and just had a ball.
Let's go to the phones. I think we have Bill from Columbus, Mississippi on the line. He has a question for you. You're on the air, Bill, with Jim Clark.
Okay, thank you. I've made several trips in the past few years to Rocky Mount, and there is one particular restaurant there that specialized in barbecue, and I would like to know how I could get a recipe for that.
Do you have any barbecue?
Well, we have barbecue here, but it's made different. That one in North Carolina, Eastern North Carolina.
I'm trying to think, are you talking about Rocky Mount or Mount Airy, North Carolina?
Rocky Mount.
I'm not familiar with the restaurant in Rocky Mount. Mount Airy is Andy Griffith's hometown. That's a different town. There's a restaurant there called the Snappy Lunch, which is actually mentioned on the Andy Griffith Show, and they're world famous for their pork chop sandwich. Different thing you're talking about probably, but...
No, I'm not talking about just the barbecue shoulder. It's made, it's chopped barbecue. Seems like all they have is vinegar and red pepper, crushed red pepper.
Yeah, there's all kinds of great barbecue in North Carolina. I'm not sure the particular one you're talking about.
Okay.
Well, about barbecue here now, did Aunt Bee, was she good at barbecue?
Well, wasn't one of the things that they mentioned on the show. I'm sure she probably was. But it wasn't one of the things that she was known for, probably. She was more known for her apple pies and those kind of things.
All of those typical southern things like, you mentioned apple pie. You got all kinds of appetizers here, I noticed. Once you start into this thing, but...
I can't remember a time when there wasn't the Andy Griffith Show. I was born when the show started. I just really...
Now, in 1968, when they decided to really go out of production, that must have hit you pretty hard.
Well, by that time, of course, it was in rerun, pretty widespread. So it's the local station that carried it, you know, was already showing the reruns in the daytime when it was showing the actual primetime broadcast once a week. So it didn't really faze us that much. You know, we just kept watching the reruns. So.
You and everybody else, that's still one of the most popular shows ever in reruns, as we alluded to earlier.
Right, of course, they also had the spinoff series immediately following the Andy Griffith Show with AVRFD, so that was 3 more seasons of that. So that was kind of, Mayberry still lived, even though the Andy Griffith Show itself stopped.
What did you, as a purist, end of quote, you'd have to be to know everything about these shows, what did you think of that spinoff series?
Well, it was a good show. I think the Andy Griffith Show, in my opinion, is a classic, a great show. I think RFD was a good show. We we acknowledge it as being part of the Mayberry legacy, but we don't really focus on it as far as our following of the Andy Griffith Show. We really focus on the first eight seasons. And
do you cook?
I cook very little. I'm more of an outstanding eater. That was my contribution, was knowing good recipes when I tasted them.
Right.
And knowing which cooks to go to get them. But I relied on outstanding cooks across the country to provide the recipes.
Now, you had, does your buddy Ken Beck, does he cook?
He's a worse cook than I am.
Okay. And now, where's Watertown, Tennessee? That's where he lives,
It's very near Nashville, actually, about 30 miles from here.
Okay, that's very, very close then. So.
Yeah.
So it was no problem for you guys to get together and work on this book.
Oh, no, we had. He came over to my house on the weekends or evenings or whatever after work. He works in Nashville, so it was very convenient.
Now, there are some things that I don't really associate with the Mayberry TV show or the Andy Griffith show, like this Houdini zucchini, which I guess you credit a lady named Sandy Long from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Right.
How'd you come across this dish? I love the title.
Well, actually, the title came from, there was, of course, we had to think of something around with zucchini, and there was a reference to Barney trying to be Houdini on the show once, so that was a direct reference to the show. So it just happened, fortunately, rhymed with zucchini.
I knew better than try to trick you.
there are some pretty off-the-wall kind of things in there, but almost everything that we titled for a recipe has some reference or allusion to the show.
Well, you know, on the same page, you have Squad Car Squash.
Yeah.
A lady named Margaret Hooper from Houston, evidently. Now, how did you get the word out? You were looking for these recipes.
Well, we sent out word to a lot of folks that we knew who were good cooks who had prepared us good meals over the years in our lifetime, and also sent out notices to members of our fan club to say that they knew good cooks, or if they were good cooks themselves and had recipes that were favorites of the family or whatever, to send those in.
Yeah, that's right. You did have a kind of a built-in constituency there with the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club.
Right. A lot of those folks, you know, they were either good cooks also, but also they knew what kind of recipes would be appropriate for Aunt Bea and what they did with the show. So it was helpful from two fronts there as far as being able to get a lot of real good recipes very quickly.
Did this 300 recipes, I guess at least that, maybe you have more than that in the book.
Yeah.
300 kind of caught my attention one time on a press release.
Yeah, I think there's 320-something recipes.
Okay. How many recipes do you think you looked at?
Oh, we used virtually all the recipes that were submitted. I mean,
okay. I think maybe I should rephrase the question. What are really, how 320 recipes did you taste?
I tasted virtually all of them. There are a few of them. There were, since there's some mountain folks who made there, there's some recipes with things like possums and raccoons that are in actually the
book.
Well,
that's what I was going to get to.
Yeah, those I don't claim. those are Ken Beck's side of the family.
Well, Ken actually ate the stuff. Huh?
Well, I think he's responsible for getting them anyway. I'm not sure if he ate them. We trust the people who sent them in, and they were reliable possum and raccoon cooks. We took their word for it, basically.
Well, I've never tried it, but they say it's pretty good stuff. I don't know.
So they say, but I'll trust them on that one. But
yeah, right.
We definitely had to include those, though, because they, you know, that was an important part.
Well, sure. I mean,
Darlings and Ernest T. Bass and everybody up there in the hills.
Now, there's a couple of hoot owl pies in there. Is that made with real hoot owls?
Well, I guess it could be, but both authors of those recipes are quick to say that you can substitute chicken and it probably works a lot better. And those fact came from cast members of the show, Denver Powell, who played Briscoe Darling, and Maggie Peterson, who played Charlene Darling, the mountain family from the show. They sent those recipes in.
Yeah, Denver's recipe here says one good-sized cooked hoot owl, boned and chopped, right off the bat.
Yeah. Anyway, somewhere there, he says, you know, chicken will work just fine, too. We recommend substituting chicken for the hoot owl. It's probably the game board would, too, I suppose.
Well, this has got just about everything. I'd probably, the cakes, pies, and desserts would be the most popular with me, because there's really some great-sounding stuff in here.
And that was really Aunt Bea's specialty, too, was dessert. Of course, she could cook anything except for her homemade pickles were the one thing that she could make, was her kerosene cucumbers, as Barney called them, which is a recipe for those in there, too.
And I haven't found the recipe yet. I was looking for that earlier. Is that use real kerosene?
No,
that's poison, I think.
Yeah, they say that this tastes like kerosene, but actually, these pickles that we have, the recipe is actually a very good pickle recipe that has won awards and everything, but we still had to use the title, because Barney's not titling them as kerosene cucumbers. It's just too great to overlook. So, but other than pickles, they really could make just about anything. And, of course, again, the desserts and cookies and pies and cakes and that kind of thing were really what she was best known for. So we have an ample helping of those sorts of things.
Well, I know you even had something called Coca-Cola Pork Chops, which is submitted by Melissa Gray of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, delicious. Absolutely great. You know, people think, Coca-Cola and pork chops, but it makes a great sauce when it cooks down. It's just absolutely delicious.
I like the way you bill it, bottle of pop chops.
Well, a bottle of pop, maybe that was the thing. That was the big thing to do, was go down to the drugstore or the gas station and get a bottle of pop. So that worked out well with pop, with pork chops.
I guess we could give that recipe. You call for 8 pork chops here, and a cup of ketchup, and a cup of Coca-Cola and brown sugar and salt and pepper to taste. And you say you bake it uncovered in an oven for an hour for 350 degrees, or until the pork chops are tender.
Yeah, and it kind of with the brown sugar, the ketchup, with mixing with the Coca-Cola, it makes a real good, delicious sauce. It really is. The names of most of the recipes actually are just ones that we made up.
Okay.
I mean, things like Auntie's apple pie, there was actually apple pie that she made. But things like Otis's Dipsy Doodle Cake, that was a recipe that Hal Smith, the actor who played Otis, sent in, and we just named the recipe titles to honor him.
Yeah, I noticed you gave his wife, I guess it's his wife, Louise, credit too.
Right. It's a delicious dessert, and actually, if you love chocolate, it's absolutely out of this world. In the same case with this recipe called Opie and Leon's Favorite Buttermilk Pie, which actually Ron Howard's mother, Ron Howard, of course, played Opie, his mother sent him this recipe, and she said it was his favorite dessert when he was a little boy.
The reason I get excited about this, Jim, is this show, to me, I was not a fanatic like you were, but this show was just one continuous smile. I thought that was the charm. But sometimes it was a belly laugh, but most of the time it was just a good chuckle.
It was very subtle humor in a lot of ways. In fact, it's the kind of show, the more you watch it, the more you see, you know, sort of subtle funny things, not things that make you necessarily just blow over the floor laughing, but just very slow burn kind of humor. And I guess a large tribute to really Andy Griffith's insistence on making sure that they didn't have a lot of, you know, quick jokes and one-liners and that kind of thing, but really focused more on the humor of the characters and the writing. And that's why it wears so well.
I guess that was one of the reasons it was such a big hit and still is today in rerun land, is that you can watch this show more than once and pick up little nuances here and there.
I mean, just the more you watch Barney Fife, for example, or Floyd the Barber, you can just see how the genius of the people at work there, and Andy Griffith too, and all of them, they were just, the way, and the writing and everything, it's just amazing to watch. And again, it's the kind of show the whole family can watch together. It's a very wholesome show. It's good, clean fun. It's something that's no reason that people are drawn to it over and over, and it's got a lot of nostalgia to it too, I guess. Those are all things that are kind of mixed together to kind of make it a very attractive, entertaining show.
Now, Ron Howard, who played Opie, of course, you've done a lot of research, had a lot of contact with all the people that were in the show and the people that produced it and things like that, Jim. My impression of Ron Howard is a super guy, but come on, it wasn't kind of... Didn't he go through a brat stage sometime or another when he was a young kid playing Opie?
He really didn't. They say that I met him one time, and he just comes across as an adult. He's just as nice a person as you ever want to meet. I mean, all the stories you hear about how nice he is are true.
I've never heard any of those stories. I thought maybe I could get one from you.
He is just so nice. I mean, he's just unbelievably, everything about him is just like, you want it to be, because he's just a fine person. And they said, there's one occasion on the set one time, he got a little bit out of hand, or just was pouting a little bit or something. His dad, who's always, one of his parents, was always on the set with him constantly, either his mother or his father or both. And his father took him aside and said, now, Ronnie, you're being wrong here. It's not the way to behave. And kind of took him aside and gave a little bit of a scolding. That was the one instance where they say he required that, but that was very minor. I mean, he's just a very well-behaved, well-mannered.
So he was fortunate enough to have good parents.
That was the key. He contributes, and also the people who worked on the show, the other cast members and the crew, they were all very good people to work with, and they were good role models. And Ron Howard attributes a lot of his success today to the good experience working on the Andy Griffith Show.
Now, Goober, by George Lindsay, and Gomer Pyle, of course, Jim Nabors, were they on, I don't really, Jim was there first, right?
Right. Gomer was the first character, and then he, for success, they decided to spin it off and have his own series, the Gomer Pyle Show.
Right.
In fact, Goober and Gomer were only in one episode together as characters. You heard Gomer talk about Goober a lot, but they were actually only in one episode where you see them together.
Yeah, that's one of what I was going to get around to asking you there is I didn't remember them being together, even though it seems like they were together.
Yeah, because they were very similar in a lot of ways, and again, they talked about each other a lot. They made reference to Gomer and Goober, so he felt like they were. In fact, we felt like we knew Goober even before his character was ever seen, because Gomer talked about him and said Goober says hey and all that. So you really felt that you knew Goober even before he was there.
So George Lindsay really came in as an afterthought when Jim Nabors was leaving the show for his own.
But it turns out actually George Lindsay had the part of Gomer originally, and then they just right before he was set to start. They discovered Jim Nabors at the last minute and picked him instead. Otherwise, George Lindsay would have been Gomer. So that was kind of a fluke. But then they remembered that, and they said, well, once Gomer left, they thought, well, George Lindsay's the perfect person for Goober. So,
well, I knew we'd get a good piece of trivia that's not commonly known from you, Jim, before we got off
yeah.
the time. That was good. Now, I have to ask you, do you have a favorite episode?
Probably. There's so many good ones. I think the funniest episode is the one where Aunt Bee makes her homemade pickles or her kerosene cucumbers. I think that one, minute for minute, has more laughs, just great writing and terrific acting. But there's one called Man in a Hurry where a traveling businessman's car breaks down. He's in a hurry to get through Mayberry, didn't want to stay, and is very frustrated by the slow pace of Mayberry. But before the episode's over, he's learned to appreciate the slow pace, and in fact doesn't want to leave, and is trying to figure out ways that he can stay in Mayberry.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one epitomizes the show maybe best of any, as far as how we are when we watch the show. We're in a hurry sometimes when we turn on the television, but by the time we finish watching that half hour of Mayberry, we slow down, and we want to stay and appreciate the slow pace. I think, in fact, the polls we've taken to my club members over the years, that's the one that ranks as the number one favorite among fans.
And now, you're a son of the South, so you ought to have a different impression of the show than maybe other people in other states. You said you have members in all 50 states.
Right.
How would a real Northeasterner, does he accept the show basically the same way you do?
Really, really do. It's amazing, and I think people that maybe in the South take it a little more personally because they can really identify with the geography and the southern accents and that kind of thing and some of the things they do. But people nationwide all over really seem to enjoy the show just as much and really appreciate the humor and the good storytelling.
Yeah, and they seem to be able to do this without offending anyone, which was great. This is Jerry Pippin. We have on the line from Nashville Jim Clark, who is a co-author of Aunt Bee's Mayberry Cookbook. And Jim, of course, founded along with Ken Beck the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club in 1979. I have not made up my mind whether I need to call you a Mayberry devotee or an Andy Griffith fan or a fanatic. What would be best to describe you?
Well, my official title in the fan club is Presiding Goober, so I think Goober fits the bill.
We had a listener ask us during the break there, because she wanted to know, when we talked about your favorite episode, how about your favorite recipe?
Oh, boy, there's so many great ones, many that I grew up with. But I'd say right now, the Opie and Leon's favorite buttermilk pie that I mentioned earlier that Ron Howard's mother sent in, I think is, boy, it's easy to make, even I can make that one, and it's absolutely delicious, superb.
What is it exactly? What kind of pie is it?
It's a buttermilk pie. It's kind of like a custard pie. It's real sweet dessert, and simple to make, and if almost possible to mess up, and absolutely just delicious.
Oh, there's some great-looking pies in here. Thumbaloo's very chocolate cheesecake. That looks good.
Yeah, that's one I have quite frequently. My wife usually makes that one. A little trickier, but again, it's not that hard, and boy, if you love chocolate, it's delicious.
All kinds of things. You know, probably my favorite episodes involved Andy Griffith and Don Knotts and some of the things that happened in jail, like the time that Otis either was locked in or out. I don't remember exactly. It was a hilarious episode, I guess. The deal was they just left the jail open for Otis when he got drunk. Was that the deal?
Right. Of course, he had his own key to the jail, too.
Yeah, right. That was it. And somebody lost the key or...
Right.
I guess Don Knotts ended up getting locked in, I think.
Yeah, there's quite a few episodes where that happens to Barney. He gets locked in the cell one way or another, or else can't get Otis out, or, you know, the keys get left on the desk, the door slams shut, and they're stuck in the cell or something crazy like that.
What's your next project?
Nothing on the horizon as far as Mayberry things right now. We're just kind of rolling along and watching the show.
Oh, okay, thanks very much, Jim Clark, for being on. And that's Aunt Bee's Mayberry Cookbook.